intercepted by Sam Mills.
Steve Smith is going to go all the way. Panthers win in overtime.
Newton steps up, goes for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown. Brian Burns to the house.
And it is caught for the touchdown by Moore.
And in the foot race, McCaffrey to the end zone.
Keep pounding on three. 1, 2, 3. Keep pounding.
Panthers fans, welcome back to another edition of the Roar Podcast on Blue Wire. John Ellis, freshly vaccinated here, round one, back with you. Billy Marshall here alongside. We're going to dive into a lot of things going on here from the past week. We've been catching up on everything that's going on for the Panthers, of course, the NFL draft coming up, a lot to discuss. Billy, how you doing, man?
Doing well. Sorry, I was just finishing up a big gulp of water there. Sorry for the delay. But yeah, no, I'm doing pretty good.
And I was gulping water right then too, so we're both hydrated. Glad you're well. And I mean, let's get right to it. Sam Darnold is a Carolina Panther, Billy. I know you've been a little bit quiet on the issue here on Twitter. I've, you know, laid out some of my feelings on what this trade means for the team. But again, a lot is to be determined because Sam, to me, is an incomplete product. But I just wanted to get your thoughts. I know a lot of people out there want to get your opinion initially on what Carolina did in acquiring Sam Darnold from the New York Jets.
I thought it was an interesting move. I'm not like totally against it, but I'm also like not really supporting it 100% either.
Right.
I'm sort of like in between. Obviously you're going to hear the echo chamber that is football Twitter be vehemently against it because of how Darnold has performed the past few years. But I was texting, my good friend Scott, good friend of yours too.
Yep. And oh yeah.
He's been a Darnold fan for a while and he obviously liked the move, but it's just in general, some of the conversations we've had in the past and some of the ones that he's had on his video channel and also on Twitter when he was active is a lot of circumstance around how the quarterback position is perceived isn't just strictly through what you can see through the data and through the production as well.
Right.
And so like when I hear like the discourse surrounding all the negatives around Darnold and how he's played and performed thus far, I definitely agree with it. I can see it on film too. He's not really like he hasn't been performing as well as you'd probably like a number three overall pick to perform. And that's why the Jets traded him. The Jets wouldn't have won two games if they didn't feel that way. But I also think the circumstance that he was around is a bigger, like everyone tries to mention it, but then they pivot immediately to, you know, his production and how he's performed. Because I think that the circumstance surrounding it is a lot bigger of the conversation than people really want to admit. So at the same time, there's still things that he does that I don't really care for and like, and he's made some boneheaded plays and I don't know, it's going to be a big dose of reality to see how this goes down. But I think that each side, maybe I'm giving you a non-answer and maybe I'm not really like giving you what the people want, which is which side of the fence I fall squarely in the middle. I really feel like there's just like a lot of people who were, you know, they know how to evaluate quarterbacks. They do a really good job with the numbers too. And I mean, they got burned once when Josh Allen turned out to be good. I just think like there needs to be some sort of patience kind of extolled because this could also be the next Josh Rosen, which is pretty similar to the compensation that the Dolphins gave up to get Rose and the Panthers, same thing, pretty similar compensation they gave up to get Darnold.
Yeah. I talked to a source within the organization who told me why, right when it happened, Monday around 4:15, text him, and he was excited. He said, yes, didn't have to give up the farm like we would have for Watson. He's young. Also mentioned that the organization liked him coming out, and this individual has been there for a while, so he would know. I think to me, the answer you gave, you know, that's one thing we pride ourselves here on is not giving hot takes just for the sake of it. because I think we could formulate a take to move the needle. But honestly, Billy, I think I'm right there with you that it's to be determined. This is very much an experimental trade. There's still a lot to figure out with Sam, his production. I mean, you can look at the numbers, 45 touchdowns, 39 picks. He's under 60% completion. Obviously, a lot of what he does well, I spent some time looking at his tape last week, and obviously I haven't looked at every snap, but he does a lot of good things out of the pocket, out of structure. When things break down, I like what he does. Obviously, there's that one throw that he made against the Niners that everybody's in love with. But outside of that, he's done some good things. Within the pocket, he tends to be a little bit messy with his footwork, it looks like. That's some of the same criticism I've heard from other experts as well. But again, I think a change of environment, getting Robbie Anderson back in the fold, whom seems excited about it, to be honest. You got DJ Moore, Christian McCaffrey. I think it's an opportunity for him to reinvigorate what was once a promising young career, because he still is very young. And you got Joe Brady right there. Who knows how long Joe Brady's going to be here, though, but still, milk Joe Brady for all you can if you're Carolina right now. Let's see if he can correct some of this stuff that's gone wrong with Darnold, put him in a system that works, and then wherever Joe Brady heads from there, maybe Sam can carry that momentum over. It's sort of like Cam Newton did with Chudzinski into Mike Shula. We'll have to see. But I do like his size. I think he's got some good traits, and I liked him a lot coming out of USC. So, I mean, we'll see. I think the price was decent. And, Billy, honestly, get your thoughts on this. The contract very much leaves it open for them to still look at quarterback in the draft, I think. I don't know if they will. I don't know if they should, but it still doesn't rule it out.
I don't think it rules it out this year. Certainly not next year either. I just feel like this move signals that they are going to address the other areas of their roster that still need to be supplemented, whether – it's secondary, offensive line, another weapon. I don't know. They can go either direction. I'm not really going to complain about it. But I think that this move, especially the fact that they gave up the premium picks, which are in 2022, really gives you an idea that they realize that this roster still needs to be still needs areas that need to be addressed.
Right. What did you think about the compensation? Were you all right with it? Just at first glance, I mean, it's a six this year, a couple next year. I do like that it wasn't more than a six this year. What were your thoughts on the comp package?
So this is probably an area where I would agree with a lot of the people who are down in the trade. I do think the compensation was a lot. Again, I don't know what type of position they were negotiating from. It's very difficult for me on the outside to judge that.
Right.
And I feel like you can grade the trade in the moment based on the compensation that they gave up. Now, certainly if he performs at an all pro level, then the hindsight of giving that up is worth it. But we don't know that. I think people get a little bit too hung up on draft grades and free agency grades. And I think we talked about this on the last episode. I think free agency is a little different just because of the relationships and the circumstances required. But I think with trades and especially draft grades, that you can have a very good sense of the direction and what you're giving up for a known commodity in this case, which is Sam Darnold. But yeah, I thought it was a little too much. I would not have given up more than a third, but they did, and it's 2022. So I think it gives them an opportunity to trade back and acquire 2022 second round pick. Maybe you're trading back to like the 13 to 15 range. I think we discussed that on the previous episode. So right. It just gives you options and flexibility for next year. I think the compensation that they give up was a little too much, but I mean, it's tough to really know what position of leverage they really had.
It is tough. I mean, you hear multiple reports that some people say they were bidding against themselves. Others have mentioned a couple of other teams. I saw Albright mention Denver was possibly in the mix, but they weren't willing to go that far with it. So you never know. I mean, you're right. In the moment, it's hard to really put a grade on the compensation. But, yeah, I mean, we'll see. It's a chance for him, like I said, with some tools that he does have to get with Joe Brady and to see what he can do, because the Bridgewater experiment failed. I mean, it was, you know, it is what it is. The contract, I said it from day one, just didn't click with me, didn't feel right. I'm willing to raise my hand and say there's a lot of things I get wrong, including my eval on Cam Newton's arm. I mean, obviously there's some things going on there that I didn't foresee being quite the issue that they turned out to be. And who knows, he might regenerate. His legs are fine. But back to the Bridgewater, it puts Carolina in an interesting spot now, Billy, because now there's talk of teams actively possibly being interested in Teddy. At least that's what Rap Sheet is talking about. It's funny because we get stuck in this vortex of watching our own players, you know, from Carolina, and we grade them and we over-critique them at times. But these other teams, you know, it's the same thing that's happened with Sam. A lot of Jets fans are saying, well, fine, take Sam, go on, have it. A lot of Panthers fans are excited. There are still teams out there that presumably value Teddy Bridgewater. What are your thoughts on possible fits there? Because it does look like they're going to try to make a deal to get Teddy moved out.
Yeah, they can try to make the deal as much as they want, but it's just they're going to release him when it's all said and done.
I think so.
I mean, it's the same situation with Cam Newton last year. I don't know how much money they're willing to eat on his guaranteed contract. Maybe they eat 8 to 9 to 10 million. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm fairly confident that given the position they're in, and again, we talk about a position of leverage and strength, they're not really in that position right now. If you're a team like Denver who might be interested, why not just wait for Bridgewater to be cut, especially before the draft? Like, why would you want to give up? Like, if Denver goes into the draft, potentially drafting a quarterback in the first, second, third round, if you don't get your guy, then maybe you can just wait for Carolina. Like, what? I just don't see any scenario where Bridgewater is on the team. So it's like, are you really just going to hold him just to hold him? No, you're going to probably cut him because his salary isn't really at an acceptable level to be a backup, because you gave up this type of compensation for Darnold and you guaranteed his fifth year. That means that he's going to be your starter, no questions asked. And I don't see Bridgewater, you know, really buying into just being a good team sport, nor should he.
And he shouldn't. He's been voted the good guy of the year by the media, and I get that, but that's based on his participation with the media. That has nothing to do with how he would perceive a backup role, and I think Teddy, in his own mind, would like to continue to pursue something bigger than that, but we'll see. You know, the teams that get mentioned with this, they don't make sense to me. The two that come to mind are Denver. I mean, they already have Drew Locke, by the way. They have an investment there. That doesn't make a lot of sense. And to your point, why not just wait to see what you could get in terms of Bridgewater when he's released at some point? And then Washington, I've heard them come up, but they've already traded for Kyle Allen. They do have
– they signed Fitzpatrick.
They got Fitzpatrick too. They honestly could very well eye a quarterback in the draft. I mean, I've seen scenarios in some of these mocks that I actually respect that see them trading up perhaps in front of Carolina to grab one of these QBs. So I just don't know if Teddy Bridgewater, you guys around the league talk to each other and, you know, you watch the film. If we can see it, certainly they can see it. You have to really trust a real miraculous sort of turnaround from a confidence standpoint to trade for Teddy Bridgewater. Because I think last year, I mean, I'm not trying to get the guy's head because I don't know what he's thinking, but he didn't play like a confident quarterback last year. So, and he was given a lot of opportunities with the weapons, with the Joe Brady system, and he just didn't pass the test. That's what I said last year, Billy. Down the stretch, a lot of fans were clamoring for this team to tank, and I understand that. I get it. But that was Bridgewater's audition, man, to really not only solidify himself here, but to show other teams out there, hey, you know, if Carolina wants to go in another direction, here's my show kicks. Here's my tape. And it was not very impressive. So I just think that's where teams are right now in looking at Bridgewater, but we shall see. Another free agent signing, A.J. Boye. I think I got that right. The team put out a video sort of helping us to pronounce his last name. Longtime corner. He's about to turn the corner at 30, but he's got some skills. He's got some length. He had a good year back in 17. What does Billy Marshall think about A.J. Boye coming into 2021 opposite Dante Jackson?
Yeah, it's similar to a lot of their free agent signings. They're just looking to fill out the roster, and I don't see Boye being anything more than, like, you know, an average player like most of their offseason signings. Which is fine. You're not really looking to, you know, build your roster out with blue chip players in free agency. But yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly good depth. And I mean, you just always want to have the cornerback room. You know, with decent amount of bodies in there just so you can rotate and give guys opportunities to mix and match in certain areas, whether it's in the slot or in the outside. Now, I will say that Boye only played like 7 games last year, and he's obviously going to miss the first 2 games this year. So, I mean, this, again, it's just an area that they're filling before the draft. It should absolutely not preclude them from addressing this position high in the draft either. So,
yeah. Agreed. I think, you know, and that's one thing I said, a lot of the takes that were coming out, well, this solves Carolina's problem at corner. No, not quite. Not quite. I think it does give them, like you said, a reliable veteran on the opposite side who has some good skills and has a good history of getting the ball, and that's always a good thing to have. I think he's an upgrade over Rasul Douglas.
I would agree with that.
You can say there's some things there that you like better, but I guess we'll turn to the draft now. I mean, this is all we're going to be talking about for the next few weeks, Billy, is this draft. It's what we've been talking about in large part for the last couple of months with all these pro days. And, you know, we've seen the best quarterbacks out there throw at this point. We other than Trevor Lawrence, obviously, who's coming back from injury and going to weddings and spending time at the Masters. But I think Trevor's comfortable enough with his spot with Jacksonville. I don't think there's anything sliding there. Outside of Trevor, there's still a lot of question marks. You've got, honestly, Zach Wilson, who seems to be the guy at 2, but I'm still not completely sold that the Jets won't take Fields. And then you start looking down the board. Carolina's in a position now where one of these guys will likely fall to them. Pitts, Slater, Sewell, if they're very lucky. And then Trey Lance could be sitting right there, along with the Surtain. They've got some options there, Billy. As we sit right now, I know you've had a chance to kind of look at some of the big boards out there, and I'm sure you do your own analysis as well, your own grading. How do you view Carolina at number 8 right now if they stay there? And then we can talk about trade back options after that.
I mean, given where they are now, I think it's a pretty decent position because they have addressed the quarterback, whatever you think of him. So, you know, just get back to your first point. I think the Jets general manager pretty much confirmed that they're taking Wilson on a press conference this week. I think Steve Young said something about like how the Jets are definitely taking Wilson, and Steve Young is a BYU alum, and the Jets general manager said, yeah, Steve is pretty plugged into BYU. So that's kind of like somewhat of a confirmation on that. I've also seen reports, I don't know if you've seen them, that Justin Fields and Trey Lance are having additional pro days. I don't know what's up with that. Maybe it's the teams like San Francisco, Atlanta, Denver, whoever else, New England even, potentially getting another look at those guys. It's kind of like a workaround because they're not doing those private workouts this year for whatever reason. I think that's a mistake. We'll leave that for another day. So I think, yeah, they're definitely in a good position. You know, for me, I would take Pitts if I had the option of one of the three guys that you just mentioned. And then I'd probably lean, I would have, this might be a surprise to some people, I would probably have Slater rated higher than Sewell.
Tell us what you like about Slater over Sewell. Now, here's what I've heard about Sewell. Obviously, the arm length, the height, the reach issue. I know Paul Alexander's working with all these guys, and I've heard him talk about all these prospects. One thing I've heard from some scouts is there's a little bit of concern about his height, about his reach. But Slater, I'm with you. His versatility is interesting. And they're both great players, obviously. I'm sure you share that opinion. Where do you see Slater being a little higher in Carolina's priority list over a Penei Sewell, or at least on your list?
Well, to be 100% clear, Sewell actually has longer arms than Slater.
Okay.
So 33 and a quarter for Sewell and then 33 for Slater, which, again, I think that's probably like the baseline, the minimum, 33. Yep. You don't want to be below that. I just think Slater is a much better athlete. And I think that really matters. Like, my two top offensive tackles last year were Wirfs and the guy from Louisville who went to the Jets, Becton. And those guys were just like freaky athletes. And they were really good last year. So Wirfs was arguably like the best right tackle in the NFL. And he was a rookie. And now I'm not saying Slater matches up to Wirfs by any stretch of imagination. But again, I think that you watched that game against Chase Young in 2019.
Oh, yes.
And he was just throwing him down. And
he was dominant, yeah.
Him, and, I mean, we know Chase Young, again, number two overall pick, and he turned out to be a really good edge rusher.
We got introduced to Chase Young last December, Billy. We saw him firsthand. He was a beast.
I think Slater's dad also played in the NBA. I don't know. I don't know who his dad is. I'm reading this report that says that his dad was like a journeyman in the NBA. So he has like, a lot of his dad, Reggie Slater, played college basketball at Wyoming. I'm reading this report here from Dane Brugel, whose reports, scouting reports are really good. I just think like the athleticism, number one, the versatility that you mentioned, and that I didn't even mention the versatility you did. And supposedly that's something that Matt Rhule and really values because they signed the two offensive linemen this year, Irving and Elfline, due to their versatility and their ability to line up a different spot. So I think that is going to matter, because let's just go back last year where you had a situation where, you know, a left guard gets injured, then you could potentially like slide Slater in and then bring your backup left tackle, like a Trent Scott or Greg Little, whoever it is, and to play that left tackle with those two guys. They can't really play left guard or right guard or anywhere else, where Slater, he does give you that versatility. Now, obviously I would prefer a natural left tackle. But I think that given, you know, his athleticism, he's a really smart guy from what I'm reading too. So I think that he would be very sound choice, and I think that he would his ability to play in zone or power schemes, I think it's I think I would give him the edge over Sewell.
Interesting. Yeah, now I talked to a league source who was there at Oregon's pro day, and he obviously he said Pat Meyer was there. Was Pat Meyer there for to evaluate Slater?
Yes.
Well, yeah, I think I saw you post that. So I mean, obviously Pat's gotten a chance, wisely so, to get a firsthand look at each of these guys. And I think you're right. I like Darrisaw as well. I think that gets me back to my next point. We talked about potential trade backs. Now, if Carolina does that, I think a couple of the teams to look for are Washington and New England to potentially move up to 8. I don't know what your thoughts are on teams that might be willing to, move with Carolina if Carolina's looking in that direction. And if Carolina's moving back to that range, who are some players that come to mind in your view?
Yeah, no, Darrisaw is certainly one guy, and Pat Meyer and I think another offensive line coach were at his pro day down in Blacksburg. I think, is a really good not even just him, the other guy from Oklahoma State, Jenkins. Or Darrisaw are very viable trade back candidates. So to get to your original question, who do I think could trade back? I think you mentioned it. I think New England is one. I think that maybe even Los Angeles Chargers at 12 or 13, because they have a pretty stacked roster and they're looking for a left tackle too. So if they really value Sewell or I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing right, Sewell.
I've heard it pronounced so many ways. I just go with Sewell, but I'm probably getting it wrong too.
Yeah, so let's just assume that one of the offensive tackles, Sewell or Slater, is gone by pick 8, and it's one of the two. And you still have some other players that you have graded in a similar range. Like, for all we know, they could have Darrisaw and Slater or Sewell graded very close to each other. So they feel like, and I think this is what Scott Fitterer said at his first press conference, is that when you have like a tier of players graded similarly, you will trade back and accumulate a few more picks or a couple more picks, and then also get another player who's graded very on the same level as the guy you just traded down from. So Los Angeles, again, they're looking for that left tackle. Already mentioned the Patriots. Washington, yes, that is another one. And certainly they have a relationship here with the front office. There was a – I don't know if you saw this picture floating around. I think it was at Ohio State. It was at a pro day. Mm-hmm. I think it was Ohio State. There was a photo of Marty and Matt Rhule having a very cordial conversation. Oh. It looked, they had some laughs with each other. And I think like, it was like one of those videos, they do after the pro day where it kind of has like a, some pretty cool music over the guys working out. And there was a picture.
Teflon Marty still out there evaluating all after all these years, man.
Yeah, so there was a, I think there was like showing all the coach and the personnel, and they showed like the Mike Tomlins and the other coaches, and then they zoomed into Matt Rhule having a convo with Marty Herney. So I'm going to assume that there is still a professional working relationship between the two. And obviously, when the Panthers played the Washington football team this year, the Panthers did the tribute to Rivera and a lot of the things before the game. So, yeah, I think that Washington and New England, those are two options. And Pat Stewart spent some time with the Patriots front office too. So I think those two make the most sense. But, yeah, who knows? There might be another team that we're not even thinking of could make that splash. And that's why I threw out the Chargers as a potential option, because they did trade up last year, not for Herbert, but at the back end of the first round. They traded back into the first round to get Kenneth Murray, the linebacker. So just throwing those couple of names out there as options. But, yeah, I'm also a fan, like you, of Darisaw. I think him or Jenkins would be very good options if they do trade back.
Jenkins is a monster. He's 6'6", 320. I've also heard he can play guard. So he's got some of that versatility as well. He obviously would be a huge guard inside at 6'6". And I just, with Darisaw, I go back to, once again, our friend Paul Alexander, who we talk with on Twitter once in a while. He's great. Coach Paul Alex on Twitter. If you guys want to follow somebody who knows about offensive line play, Billy and I can give the stamp of approval on Paul. He was very clear about Darisaw. Kind of, he did. I think I'm just paraphrasing here. He walked into a room and said, "You know, this is a guy who can play left tackle from day one. Just his frame, the way he's built." So again, that's a guy. If you can trade back and assure yourself that one of those two guys we mentioned would be available in the middle of the teens, might be worth it. Pick up some picks, sort of recoup your losses from that Darnold trade. It's very much a possibility because Scott Fitterer, Billy, you know, he comes from Seattle. They did that a lot back there.
Yeah, and I'm just also just trying to connect the dots here. They've been going around the country on so many, like, different universities at these pro days. They obviously coached a bunch of guys at the Senior Bowl. So yeah, just trying to get inside the mind of Matt Rhule where he's like, I like this guy, I like this guy. I really like what he did. I like this guy did. So I'm just kind of, like, coming up with potential options to – you know, maybe figure out how they can work some of their needs and into the roster. Now, again, I will say in the unlikely scenario that Pitts does fall to 8, I am rushing that card into the podium and sending that in. I don't think that happens because I'm pretty confident that he's going to go like no later than the Dolphins. But yeah, no, I would 100% take Pitts, and Pitts is, he's also from Philadelphia. I remember there was I was reading something after his pro day about how him and DJ Moore were like, I don't know what they call it in down where you're from, but like the all conference team in Philadelphia, like they were the all like city team or whatever.
Yep.
And again, we know the connection with Matt Rhule. He tried to recruit him at Temple, and I'm sure that you've been having a lot of fun with those pictures that you saw from the pro day with the red eyes that you put on.
I love it. I love it. I love that Matt is in the mix. It's one of the things I was real skeptical about this Matt Rhule hire, but when I think he proved that he can coach in this league last year. And I also love the fact that, you know, he's mixed it up with these college programs for years now, Billy, and it gives him, I think, an edge during this time of year. He's right in the mix. He understands the psyche of a lot of these kids. He's recruited many of them. And it does, I think, I don't know if it gives him an edge in terms of long-term performance, but at least in the moment, grading these guys out, building relationships, as you talked about, talking with other coaches. I heard somebody mention this as well, that one analyst, I gosh, I forget who it is, but he said if teams aren't talking with coaches about their prospects right now, they're foolish. And I totally agree that there's some teams that I heard this mentioned in this Nick Saban Belichick documentary that I watched recently on HBO. I'm sure you've seen it or heard about it, but you know, Saban was like flabbergasted. He's like, I had some guys, you know, some coaches in the NFL, some personnel people never reach out to me about players they picked from my team. And it just never ceases to amaze me. But I'm sure that Rhule, given his close connections to a lot of these college coaches, is going to be very much in the conversation in terms of, you know, wanting to know, especially now without the combine, without the ability to meet with these guys, take them to dinner with the COVID environment. You got to rely on these conversations with coaches to get a real good sense of not only the type of player you're getting, but the type of person you're getting as well. So I think it's really important. And I agree, Pitts, you know, look, a lot of people have him going to Atlanta, but there's also speculation that the first four picks could be quarterbacks. So I think if he gets down to number five, what if, you know, Jamar Chase? That makes sense for them. And then you got Miami. You know, what if they go with Smith? What if they go with Waddle? You just never know. And then Carolina sits there at eight. If Pitts does slip, I'm with you. Run that card up as fast as you can. Get the pick in because he is a freak. I saw one rep of him on the perimeter. I forget who posted it. Again, my name's blanket here. Maybe it was Eric Crocker. I'm forgetting who. But it was a perimeter rep he had against J.C. Horn. And those two guys were just tangling. And at the end of the top of the route, Pitts was just dominating him. And that's one of the best corners in the draft. So, I mean,
it's the same thing that Surtain, too.
Yeah. Yep.
He actually like beat Surtain with his feet off the line as if he's like, you know, a 10-year wide receiver. So, yeah. I mean, just take the tight end position off his name and put wide receiver. Like he's someone made this comparison. I don't know who, but I've seen it. Maybe I didn't, not on Twitter, maybe on Reddit or somewhere. He reminds me a lot of Mike Evans. And I just looking at the body type and the way they play and the way they separate, like if you're getting Mike Evans at pick eight, I would say that's a very good investment.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the production with Pitts as well, it's been outstanding. And then the 6'6", 240 frame, you're right. I mean, Mike Evans, I don't think he's quite tipping it at 240. Maybe he is, but he moves like, you know, he moves gracefully for that size and his
rare athleticism.
Rare. He's Julius Peppers in the red zone, basically, with his wingspan. And you get him down there with Dan Arnold. My goodness, you've got two guys at 6'6 plus that, you know, can reach, can get up there and just make things happen in the red zone. I keep thinking about the red zone because that's where this team has struggled so much. I'm just looking at clips of him right now where he's just so much bigger than everybody else down there. It's a fascinating guy to watch.
Imagine this. Imagine if you had him on the outside and you had DJ Moore in the slot and then Anderson on the outside too. And then you put Arnold as a traditional wide tight end. I think that just gives you so many options for your passing game and just your offense in general, because now you're most likely going to have defenses come out and nickel and probably have their linebackers step away from the box. Then you'd run the ball. You give it to McCaffrey. Then you have a light box, which McCaffrey's been awesome at light boxes throughout his career. You pound them that way. And then if they try to bring more heavy sets in and try to load the box, you go play action, you beat them over the top with Moore or Anderson. And maybe Pitts and Arnold can occupy the middle of the field. But I just think that this guy, he's really special. And again, if I'm doing a mock today and if I'm saying like the best case scenario is four quarterbacks go first four picks and then Cincinnati goes with the Jamar Chase or even they go offensive tackle, because I know that their offensive line coach with their GM and their head coach are all at Oregon's pro day. So if they take Sewell and Miami takes Jamar Chase or one of the offensive weapons, whether it's Smith or Waddle.
Right.
I don't think that happens. I think Miami is most likely running to the podium taking Pitts before they take Chase or Smith. And then Detroit, they probably will take a receiver or I don't know what they're going to do. But then he falls to eight. I just think that's perfect.
Yeah, I do too. I want to get your thoughts on this. It might necessarily be Carolina related. It could be. You never know where this individual will fall. But there's been so much talk about Mac Jones. I know you and I have had some initial thoughts on Mac. I want to talk about it from a very fair perspective here, because I one thing I don't want to do is bash a guy just for the sake of it. These guys are all young. They're all working hard. Do you think the Mac 49ers thing is for real? Do you think it's actually going to happen?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I will say, though, that the reporting that I've read within the last week or so, I've been listening and watching a lot of different shows, whether it's ESPN or some of these podcasts where they get the big guests like a Rich Eisen show or DP show or Albert Breer's podcast. Initially, it seemed like a lot of the reporters like Schefter were set on 100%. It's Mac Jones, no questions asked. now I'm reading and seeing a lot of pivots from that. They said that Mac Jones is the leader in the clubhouse right now, but there could be a situation where it's Fields or Lance going to San Francisco. What I will say is this, and this is a thing that kind of like that I've been kind of sitting on, and not a lot of people are realizing it. No one knew about the trade until it happened.
Yeah.
They kept it quiet. Like the 49ers, the Dolphins, the Eagles, they all kept it quiet. So why are people all of a sudden like just so confident that this is going to be their pick when no reporter, or anyone threw out the idea that they would move up all the way to number 3 overall?
And that's just a great point, Billy. That's a so great point.
To me, it signals that a team, a very good front office, like the San Francisco, where they keep leaks very, 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 very quiet. They don't throw stuff out there, and it's very difficult for people to kind of get understand where it's coming from. I remember the same thing happened with the Garoppolo trade. No one saw that coming either.
Yeah.
But then it happened. And so for me, it's a lot of projection right now. People are just trying to, write the point home that because this guy, played for Shanahan, that this is who he wants. I don't think so. I just think that I think Fields, Lance, or I mean, if they take Jones, they take him. I'm just a little skeptical that they do.
You know, Mac has some value. Mac does some things that is, very much to liking of a guy like Kyle Shanahan in terms of processing, in terms of the ability to not only, get the ball out quick, be accurate, but also, processing that run game as well. I think there's some things that Mac does very well. I just don't know if he's worth a top 3 pick, though. And that's where I come back to. I just look at his tape and I'm like, man, is this the guy you want to invest your future in when you've got, to me, a guy like Fields, who's my number 2, has just so much athleticism, so much ability to put the ball downfield vertically. I don't know, but to each their own. I mean, everybody's got their own flavor here. One more thing before we break huddle here and call it a day. Quarterbacks are always something we talk about in the first block of the draft, but there's some guys that fascinate me on the back end. You got Kellen Mond, who's getting a little bit of buzz now. He's got some accuracy issues, but great athleticism, and he's played a ton of football under Jimbo Fisher, who usually spits out NFL quarterbacks. You've got Kyle Trask, who's got, not necessarily good athleticism, but he's built like a Drew Bledsoe, and he can put the ball in some good spots. This kid from Stanford, I guess Mills, I've heard some good things about him. Are there any quarterbacks you're seeing in the maybe the third, fourth round? I know Carolina got into that trap with Will Greer. It's sort of a dangerous thing maybe at this point. But are there quarterbacks there you think it's worth taking a flyer on if you're Carolina towards that part of the draft?
I don't think they should be doing that. Yeah. Let's just look at their roster, especially in the first 2 days. I mean, if they want to take a flyer on a guy in the fourth or fifth round, whatever. I'm not going to like complain about that. But
right.
I really think like their first 3 rounds should be prioritizing guys who can make a difference for your football team in year 1. And I don't see a quarterback doing that. I think if you address 3 different areas, if you trade back and you accumulate more, the more the better, because drafting is an inexact science, and no matter how confident you are in your abilities, you're most likely going to be wrong. So that's why I always value trading back.
Yeah.
But number 1, offensive line, no matter what they do in number 8 or in the first round, they still have to figure out, some positions, even though I think that they've spent a lot of money on offensive line this offseason, just guaranteeing $27 million to 3 players. I think that's a pretty significant investment, even though one of them is a franchise tag. But then you have to look at the secondary. It's not just corner, it's safety too. I mean, they released Trey Boston. They haven't really replaced him. So that's, again, another area. I think linebacker is passable for now, but the same thing with defensive tackle. I'm not sure how they feel about their current group. I mean, clearly they felt great if they're going to release Zach Kerr.
Yeah.
And I do think that, I mean, we're having fun with the Pitts discussion, but I really do think that a skill player should be in play if they don't take one in the first round, whether it's second or third round. I mean,
right
now I just see 2 reliable pass catchers, and that's Moore and Anderson. I have nothing. I don't know how to feel about David Moore. Dan Arnold, I think, is fine, but I have no idea how to feel about how he's going to take on a full-time role in this offense.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
So that's kind of like where I stand right now.
No lies there. No lies detected. I think there's a lot to sort through. Yeah, there's some free agents still out there. Mitchell Schwartz, you know, you looked at another offensive tackle who is sitting. Russell Okung still sitting out there. Villanueva. So obviously, if they maybe perhaps go Pitts, they find a way to bring in one of these veteran left tackles. I know they already signed Irving, but I'm not certain they consider him a, you know, day one starter left tackle. Maybe they do. Rick Wagner's out there. And you've got some veteran offensive tackles still on the market you could probably snag for a one-year deal. So there's that side of it too. Post-draft, there'll probably be some pretty decent names still available out there.
I also think that this is a deep tackle class.
Yes.
Let's just assume if you're not getting one of the top three or four guys, I'm going to assume that's Sewell, Slater, Darisaw, and Jenkins. You look in the second round, there's still a lot of really talented players that could be available, whether it's Cosme from Texas, Eichenberg is a good one from Notre Dame, Raduns, who they coach at the North Dakota State, the Senior Bowl, Brady Christensen, who is giving Zach Wilson the cleanest pockets in the world. And you have a local guy, Deonte Smith, you can potentially get in a third round from East Carolina. So, I mean, I think that this group is pretty underrated as far as their depth. Now, of course, everyone's going to point to, they tried to draft a second round tackle and Greg Little. Yes, but they drafted a player I didn't really think was very good. So it's a little different now. They have a new regime and picking their players. So I think that if they do go with, you know, whether it's a Pitts or one of the cornerbacks at number eight, I think they can pivot just fine to finding an offensive lineman in the second and third round.
All right, Billy. Good talk, man. Anything else before we break for the week?
No, that's pretty much it on my end.
Enjoyed it as always, my friend. We'll, of course, you and I will stay in touch this week, maybe sneak in one more pod for the weekend. But it's a bit of an odd schedule for us, guys. We appreciate you being patient. You know, we've got a lot to cover before the draft. We'll be trying to do a few more of these before draft night. And then, obviously, post-draft, we'll have a big one for you to go through every pick and give you analysis. For Billy Marshall, John Ellis, thanks again, guys, for listening to the Roar Podcast right here on Blue Wire. See you next time.